This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buehr.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you guys back to Ryan's. Well, let's think about this. I hate this podcast every single year in terms of this episode because it is the prognostication, in the words of late great Dan Barrero. Obviously, he's still living. I just like to tease Justin Gard here, but it's just this is season preview, season prediction, game by game. It's what everybody holds us to. It's what the internet never forgets. How else do I want to describe it, Luke?
It never dies, that's for sure. You're definitely correct in that it never dies. It's always fun because the people that like to chirp are the people that don't do it. As you know, it's much more involved if you're trying to pick like an entire conference, for instance, or predict who's going to make the college football playoff or whatever. But we're trying to do one team and their schedule. It is challenging. It's not easy. It's not perfect. And I think largely what makes it challenging is incoming freshmen, transfers, and injuries. It's very hard to predict based on that. You can use some past precedent, and I think you should. But that is not the only variable going into these predictions.
Correct. So it's, again, it's 9 days away. We're in single-digit days until Jerry Kill comes back into town, and we figured it was about time. But I think before we get there, Luke, number one, I would say, if you still want to sponsor the podcast that gets thousands upon thousands of downloads for the 22 season here, of which I think, spoiler alert, we think Minnesota is going to be pretty good, this would be the time to get in.
I should mention, shoot me an email. Yeah, we are running out of space. We're almost fully subscribed for the in season. Nobody has opted into the season previews, which I find ironic because these are the ones that usually do the best, but it is what it is.
It is what it is. And I think the other housekeeping note is when we last spoke, Luke, we were talking about the hypothetical Big Ten media rights deal.
Yeah, that's actually it's a legit thing. So I have some, I think this has probably been played to death through most major talk radio.
Sure.
A lot of people are upset about what I'm seeing is they're upset about the streaming deals on this, mostly that Peacock's going to get a lion's share of some games, specifically when it comes to college basketball. Frankly, I think that's great. I think, like, for my money, it's great. I know what service I need to pay for what duration of time, and then I can kill it, and I know I have access to it. I have used Peacock from time to time to stream the English Premier League, and it's been phenomenal for the most part. What about you? Are you as upset about this streaming stuff, or do you embrace it?
I embrace it. I think the interesting part about it is, and we'll see how it all looks when the bottom line gets here, but I know Dennis Dodd from CBS Sports reported that it's going to be around 1.2 billion annually. Now, I think that's going to work out to somewhere around, I mean, if we're going to just say rough numbers, $90 to $100 million per Big Ten school. Jiminy crickets, that's a lot. And that's where, for football purposes, the way I understand it, it'll be Fox at noon or Fox at 11 a.m. It's going to be CBS at 2:30, and then it'll be NBC with a Big Ten game so that they can have Saturday night football and then Sunday night football with the NFL there. And then you mentioned it, BTN will still be around. And then you'll have Peacock, which if you didn't know this and you're a Comcast subscriber, you get Peacock for free if you have Xfinity. I don't think a lot of people know that, but you get it's included within their package right now is you get Peacock for free. So you might want to look into that. And then I've also seen, Luke, Synergy. Team Synergy is, I believe, there's going to be at least some basketball games streamed on this service called Paramount Plus, which, oh, by the way, you get for free with a Gopher Illustrated subscription after your promotion period ends. So say you do the $1 for 30 days. Well, after those 30 days, guess what? You get Paramount Plus for free. So I'm all for it. I don't care to watch ESPN. I think that if I just have to have Peacock and potentially Paramount Plus as my streaming along with maybe some BTN options, I think we're doing okay. But again, I'm all for it. So we'll see how this thing goes.
All right. So let's just maybe dive right into the predictions, or do you want to talk a little bit more about that? I think that this is still a very evolving topic with the TV rights deal, because as Kevin Warren said, you know, this could evolve into more teams. And then I think how everything stacks up in terms of the composition of the conference could still change drastically. So like, I'm not looking to have the conversation that this is like a settled deal. All we know is that it's big money. It's bigger than any other conference, and that's good for the Gophers.
Yeah. So we'll see we'll see how it all plays out with Notre Dame potentially here in the upcoming weeks. I know that Stanford and there was some Oregon's team. We'll all cross those bridges when we get to it, but it's season prediction time. And that's where,
hold on. Let's get one more thing. I just thought of, people are always concerned about PJ Fleck leaving, right?
Yeah.
And I think that the TV deal weighs into that a little bit that we should probably talk about, in that if you have, you know, anywhere from 90 to 100 million, I think you're able to pay PJ Fleck. I imagine that Big Ten coaches will remain near the top. I think this is a good thing if you want to keep PJ Fleck, this TV deal. My personal opinion, especially given the fact that they're going to be on Fox, CBS, and NBC too. The fact you can nationally promote your brand across the entire country over the air. I think this is all good in terms of retaining him if that is your desire as a Gopher fan.
And that's where, now that it's slowly becoming the power too, it's, when was the last time you saw a Big Ten coach leave for another Big Ten job? It has been a very long time.
Well, you mean a different conference. I think,
or even if he goes to the SEC,
Bielema is the last one that I can think of off the top of my head.
Well, he had to stop in between there, but
No. He went from Wisconsin to Arkansas to the NFL, then to Illinois. But I'm saying, like, off the top of my head, he's the only one that I can think that left a Big Ten job for another major conference.
Right, and I'm just saying, I don't see it. I mean, again, we see this theme in the offseason. We saw the Tennessee theme, and it's just like, what's to your point?
That's negotiating leverage, but yeah.
It's just, again, it's all just posturing at that point. But that's where, when you look at, if that's going to be the case, well, Minnesota better have a damn good season this year. If Fleck's name is going to be continued to be thrown around in circles by Justin Guard's guy, Elite Pete Thamel. So it's going to be an interesting season. The more and more I've dug into this, when we talked about it a month ago, right after Big Ten Media Days, it's just, this is a very wide open Big Ten West this year. There isn't really a clear cut to myself, and I think many of the other people that cover this conference as closely as we do. People like the Eyes on Big Ten podcast, just listen to theirs. I won't give a ton of spoilers, but you should definitely go listen to them. Again, I think it's the best Big Ten football related
and can we say
overarching
too,
podcast out there.
Their preview episode, it, like where they actually go through and try and predict the records of all the teams. Like that is about as hard as it comes in terms of predictions. And so kudos to them for one, taking that on and doing it. But that is very, very challenging. That's always one of my favorite listens. So if you're looking for a glimpse out, you're very low level here with the Gophers, but you want to look at the conference in aggregate, go check them out. So maybe Ryan, to start, let's take a look at just look at some themes before we get into games, maybe from the higher level conference, and then we can zero in on a game by game prediction. I do want to add, I think you've beaten this horse dead. You think that Vegas underestimates the Gophers a little bit. The national media and it probably props up Wisconsin more than you think. I think generally people that are kind of plugged into the Big Ten would all agree that this is probably a four horse race in the West, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, and potentially even Purdue. I think those are some of the natural storylines that exist here. Obviously some kind of storylines that never seem to die is the national champions that are the Nebraska Cornhuskers every offseason, yet they haven't been able to put it on the field the last few years during the Scott Frost era. That's probably another storyline. PJ's found a way to kind of more or less have the upper hand on Scott Frost for the most part of late.
Will that change this year? I think you're going to be interested to, again, we'll get into it. It's just to your point, it's like there are two teams I can just not a chance see winning the West. That is Northwestern and that is Illinois. I think Illinois just doesn't have the depth and the top end talent, especially offensively, to make a run.
Plus Northwestern coordinator offense, change too. But yeah,
correct. They've got a coordinator change. Northwestern's offense is just incredibly dreadful. I don't know how that team scores more than 14, 17 points a game.
Yeah.
And I say that with peace and love to the Maple Grove listeners of this podcast. Evan Hall can't do it all.
Yeah.
And they lost their best defensive player in an All-American to Notre Dame. They lost their best receiver to Mississippi State. Their quarterback is awful. And I just think that just like it was last year with Northwestern, once they get like seven games into the schedule, Luke, and that defense has been on the field for 70, 75 plays a game because their offense can't stay on the field, I think by the time that Gopher game comes around, they're just going to be dead. And I just, but to your point, I mean, for me, I see three teams in the top tier, and I'm not going to fight anybody one way or another. If they thought Iowa was going to win the conference, Wisconsin was going to win the conference, or Minnesota was going to win the conference, I've said this, I've beaten it into the ground by now. I think it's a coin flip between the three. I mean, personally, I have it 40% Minnesota, 30% Iowa and Wisconsin. And again, we'll get into the reasons why I think the slight edge right now is with Minnesota, but it's just, it is going to be a very fun November if Minnesota doesn't pull a Bowling Green, which we'll get into the kind of caliber of non-conference opponents, Luke. But there are a lot of question marks about the top three, and if you want to throw Purdue in there, four teams that, it's going to be a fun Big Ten schedule.
Yes, it will be fun. As I mentioned, there are a number of storylines which are always going to make things fun, and then the storylines are going to evolve as the season goes on. So let's just jump into the games right away. Baseline again.
So my prediction article is out for free on Gopher Illustrated. You can check the Twitter if you want to read the thousands upon thousands of words on how I got to where I got to. But
I've not read
my prediction history, Luke, isn't actually that bad.
Nice.
Like, I've been doing this since it looks like 2016-ish. I've been within one game five of the six seasons, and the only season I wasn't within one game was the COVID season, because Minnesota didn't play as many games as I predicted.
Mm-hmm.
So you can say I'm a homer. You can say whatever you want, whatever makes you feel nice and special inside. But the results are the results, Luke, and we'll see if that run can continue with this 22 season preview.
Okay, so a little bit more information going into the season. I think Ohio State is probably the overwhelming favorite in the Big Ten in general. That's pretty common year in, year out. I'd imagine from there, Vegas has probably Michigan, Wisconsin, Penn State, somewhere in that order would be my guess. Anything else you'd like to add on that?
I would say Ohio State and Michigan, I think, are in a clear tier by themselves atop the Big Ten. I think then you can get into the semantics of who's in that next tier. Is it Wisconsin? Is it Penn State? Is it Michigan State? Is it Minnesota? Is it Iowa? I just think that the only clarity I really have is that we can argue 3 through 8, and I really wouldn't disagree with you one way or another. But I think it's more so there are two top teams in this Big Ten, and Michigan and Ohio State, and Minnesota misses them both. So I think that's a godsend compared to an Iowa team that's got both in the schedule.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Maybe let's do over under. I will try and get the most relevant over under for each team that the Gophers play in Big Ten play. It will probably steer clear of the non-conference. But yeah, let's jump into the non-conference. The first game is September 1st. It is a Thursday evening at 8 p.m. It will be against New Mexico State. This is a Jerry Kill-led team who wanted absolutely nothing to do with this game, but it will be played because it is far too late to get out of this game. The Gophers are heavy favorites. The last I looked, this is probably going to change quite a bit, but it was something in the order of a 30-point favorite, Ryan. Last I looked, I haven't looked of late. So
I think they're 38-ish point favorite last I looked, which God bless you.
Yeah.
If you're taking Minnesota minus 38.
I've said this numerous times over and over on the podcast. At the end of the day, that all matters in the record books is wins and losses. Also, I think that over unders set a unique, weird expectation for fans that they can't enjoy wins even though they win. The games are supposed to be played to settle everything. On paper, really doesn't matter. But at the end of the day, enjoy the wins. The losses are what they are, and we'll go from there. But don't let expectations from Vegas steal your joy for something. I think PJ once said that
Fleck loves to say, "Don't let comparison steal your joy," which I think is something that you can certainly apply to life. And I think he's right. But to your point, I just looked. Minnesota's a 37.5 point favorite, and New Mexico State is a bad football team. Legitimately bad. They were 2-10 last year. Jerry Kill takes over, first year head coach. They lost their best receiver to the portal, who's now at Nebraska. They have a brand new starter at quarterback. Their best offensive lineman from last season is now in the NFL. They were horrible defensively. And the beautiful thing, if you are the Golden Gopher football team, is, oh, by the way, Jerry Kill's team, they have to play on Saturday night against Nevada. Why that's relevant is, number one, Minnesota gets a game tape to look and try and see what in the world New Mexico State is going to look like. And it's not like New Mexico State is a favorite in that game, because they are not. They're going to have to show everything in their playbook if they're going to win that game against Nevada. And the other beautiful part is New Mexico State then comes to Minneapolis 5 days later. So it is a short week. Minnesota gets a game tape and they are well rested. I just think that the more I've dug into this New Mexico State team, they are a far tier below, like a Bowling Green from last year, or even we'll get into Western Illinois here next. I just don't see a way that Minnesota just doesn't overwhelm them. I look at like their starting offensive and defensive lines. We're talking somewhere between 6-1 and 6-4 on the offensive line. I don't know that Minnesota has more than two offensive linemen under 6-4. And one of them is a Remington candidate. So I think this is a game Minnesota wins. They're bigger, stronger, faster, more rested, have a game tape. I am not taking Minnesota minus 37.5, but I am saying that Minnesota wins this game somewhere around 38-41, New Mexico State 10. So it's still a 4-ish touchdown victory, folks. I don't want to hear it.
I will take Minnesota for the obvious reasons. I think that they're like New Mexico State obviously isn't a great program. They're totally rebuilding. You know, whatever narrative you want to say that Jerry Kill wants to beat PJ Fleck more than anything. I suspect that it still won't be enough, and we will go to 1-0 on the season in non-conference play. The next game, so we're both 1-1, Ryan. We're 1-0.
Both 1-0. I would hope and pray that Jerry Kill. I mean, I think like the most interesting part of that game probably, because that offense is going to be incredibly bland. Look, it is probably going to be throughout the non-conference, hopefully. But I think the most interesting part of the first game is, does Jerry Kill shake PJ Fleck's hand at midfield after the game?
All right. I guess that'll be something to watch. There's got to be a prop bet out there somewhere. Okay, Western Illinois, September 10th. This will be a 11 a.m. kickoff. This will be
the best kickoff in football, by the way, which I know many listeners are disagreeing with me with. But before I say why it is, what are your thoughts on 11 a.m. kicks?
I don't mind. I'm up. My
welcome
kids
to
are
small
up.
Child life,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, no, I think 11 a.m. is great. I usually get to watch the end of the game during nap time. So there's not a lot of responsibilities towards the end of the game, which I always appreciate. But yeah, so this game is September 10th, Western Illinois.
Your favorite Missouri Valley team in the Leathernecks.
Yeah, it's a great mascot for sure. I will say this. I don't know a lot about Western Illinois, but I think Minnesota finds a way.
Yes, here's what I'll tell you. It's another first-year head coach. They fired their coach after the season because they won two games last year. Myers Hendrickson takes over. It's his alma mater. If you're looking for a Gopher connection, the running backs coach is one of Luke Buehler's favorite running backs in the last couple of decades. Donnell Kirkwood
is
the running backs coach for Western Illinois. But it's a team that is with a first-year head coach, a team that had a lot of transfers. They lost their longtime starter at quarterback in Connor Sampson. Here's another nugget for you. No wide receiver recorded a catch. So every receiver, I'll explain it a different way. Every receiver that Western Illinois had in 2021 is gone for 2022. And they also lost their top two tacklers from last season. And I know what everyone's thinking, but Ryan, Bowling Green. That Bowling Green team from last season would kick the snot out of this Western Illinois team. And even like 2019 South Dakota State was an exponentially better team than Western Illinois. This is another game that should be a rout. I would imagine the Vegas line when it comes out is going to be another one around 35 points or so. I am absolutely without question not taking that. And I am saying Minnesota 38 or 41, Western Illinois 6. Minnesota goes to 2-0. Luke, now that you know a little bit about your favorite Missouri Valley team.
I already said I'm going to take the Gophers, so we're even at 2-0. Okay, next game, September 17th. This is a 2:30 kick against the Colorado Buffaloes. This is obviously the opponent that the Gophers absolutely shellacked in Boulder. There are some changes, obviously, at their offensive coordinator, which you'll get into later. But I think the thing to highlight here is this is a Colorado team in their, second season without Mel Tucker. Is this the third season without Mel Tucker?
Third season.
So they struggled last year. I think there's no question about it. You would expect that they would be better, but one of the storylines I'm going to look to see here is how well does Colorado travel to Minneapolis? Because we saw how well the Gophers traveled to Boulder.
I can't believe you went that entire intro without saying, welcome to Narrative Street.
I literally set it up because Ryan will tell you more about their offensive coordinator later and their tight ends coach.
Look, I'm always looking for storylines in a non-conference when the caliber of opponent isn't great. And that's where the Narrative Street, I'm taking a nice little stroll down it, because welcome back to town, Gopher Twitter's forever favorite offensive coordinator, Mike Sanford, who is now calling the shots for the Colorado Buffaloes. So we get to see Mike Sanford versus Joe Rossi. Oh, baby, I'm going to have the popcorn ready. Now, this is a Colorado team that is not exactly great, and they are absolutely dreadful on offense. They ranked 129th out of 130 teams last season in total offense. And the tough pill to swallow if you're Sanford and company, and oh, by the way, longtime Gopher tight ends coach Clay Patterson is also there. So I can assure you they're going to know the ins and outs of Minnesota. So that's going to be one of the storylines I'll be watching. But the other one is the best player for Colorado left. Their star running back, leading rusher in the 2020 Pac-12 Offensive Player of the Year, and Jarek Broussard.
And didn't he go to Michigan State?
Which we'll get to in the next game, right, because Minnesota travels to East Lansing. So their best running back's gone. And the guy they were hoping to replace him with was pretty damn good. His name was Ramon Jefferson. He was an FCS All-American from Sam Houston State. But guess what? He backed off his commitment and ended up at Kentucky because NIL. So they don't have a quarterback. They don't really have a running back. What do they got for pass catchers, Ryan? Well, their number one pass catcher in last year, and Brendan Rice, which is Jerry Rice's son, transferred to USC because he got a bag. Their veteran wideout, and Dimitri Stanley, who caught 15 balls for them, he moved on to Iowa State. Now, they did bring in a transfer by the name of R.J. Sneed, someone that was all-conference at Baylor in 2020. But the other thing is defensively, their stud linebacker, you'll remember him from last year, Nate Landman, he's gone. And then their best player overall in Christian Gonzalez, who was their star cornerback, left to go to Oregon. So, oh, by the way, if you want some more, this isn't exactly a cakewalk for Colorado compared to what it is for Minneapolis or for Minnesota here. How does Colorado start the season, you ask? Well, they host a team called Texas Christian University in their first game. Now, I don't know that TCU is a great Big 12 team, but it's certainly going to give Colorado everything that they have. And then they have to travel to one of Luke's favorite vacation spots, Colorado Springs, to face an Air Force team that just won 10 games last season. So let's compare the quality of tape in the first two games that Colorado will have. Now, I could argue it doesn't matter because Clay Patterson and Mike Sanford know a lot about this Minnesota team, but Minnesota is going to have some really good game tape, and I think that's an edge. Now, this is the toughest of the three non-conference games. It's still a Pac-12 team coming in. I just have a very hard time believing that Mike Sanford's offense, as it is currently constructed, is going to be able to put up more than 17 points against this defense. So I'm going to say Minnesota wears Colorado down, and they are undefeated heading into East Lansing. I got the Gophers 31, Colorado 14, 3-0 in the non-conference.
I will agree that Minnesota will go to 3-0 in the non-conference heading into Michigan State, where the Gophers will play the Spartans, who on September 24th, game time is still not set. This will be the first road game for the Gophers. Obviously, Michigan State had a phenomenal year last year, ranked quite highly as well, but they come into this season with lower expectations. If you look at Vegas's over-under for them, they have them the same as they have Minnesota at 7.5 wins. Again, you can go down narrative street with this, Ryan, with offensive coordinator Jay Johnson still there.
See, I love all the random Minnesota connections in the schedule this year. Yeah, like Jay Johnson, of which people probably don't even remember that Jay Johnson was here. He was Tracy Clay's offensive coordinator for his lone season. Well, he hitched his wagon to Mel Tucker, and turns out that wagon was going full steam on the Oregon Trail.
All right, so let's get into this one. How do you see this one playing out, Ryan?
See, this was one that I'm just not as bullish on Michigan State as what probably the national media is. And here's how I see it is their offense, I think, is going to be pretty damn good. Like, they returned Peyton Thorne, who was a really good quarterback for them last season.
We're talking about a guy who
Peyton Thorne threw for 3,000 plus yards, 27 touchdowns. Now, they lost their all world running back, Kenneth Walker, to a second round draft pick to the Seattle Seahawks. But I think they're going to be okay there, considering they just grabbed the 2020 Pac-12 Offensive Player of the Year in Jarek Broussard. And they also grabbed former four-star Wisconsin tailback Jalen Berger. They also returned a stud receiver on the outside by the name of Jaden Reed. My question mark becomes here. What is it like up front for them? And how atrocious is that pass defense going to be? Because
it was atrocious last year.
I mean, it was horrible. It is – like, here's how bad it was. Like, we're talking about a Michigan State passing defense that allowed more passing yards than any team in college football by 500 passing yards. They were giving up 325 passing yards a game. Duke was the only other team to give up more than 300. They were just brutal. Now, Michigan State fans, if we somehow have a rogue Spartan fan listening to this podcast, welcome. And I understand that there's a lot of transfers that Michigan State is counting on defensively, including a linebacker by the name of Jacoby Windham, someone that Joe Rossi tried to get. They also brought in a corner from Georgia. And they also have an All-American defensive tackle by the name of Jacob Slade, but they lose a couple of key guys up front in Jacob Panisu and Drew Beasley. I just have questions about physicality for Michigan State, because I think they're going to be able to generate some explosive plays, but that's going to be the key to this game to me. Is you want to know why Michigan State was so damn good last year? Is because Jay Johnson's offense was a big play machine. What is Joe Rossi's defense designed to do, and what did they execute so well last season? They didn't allow big plays.
Mm-hmm.
So who do you trust more? Joe Rossi's defense to not allow big plays, or Jay Johnson's offense with a lot of weapons to be able to go do it? I'm not sure. I would say this. This is a toss-up game for me. I know that some in the national media just look at Mel Tucker's team and think, well, this is an auto win, Minnesota's first road game of the season. But this is without question to me the most barometer type of game to kind of dictate what this season is going to be. Now, it's not the end-all be-all by any chances, but I think this is a game that Minnesota ends up winning. I say that because I believe in Joe Rossi's defense more to be able to get a stop. And I've seen the way that Kirk Ciarrocca can figure out a game plan against these kind of opponents where they can find a way to put up points. Now, I have this game Minnesota 31, Michigan State 30. I think a late Matthew Trickett field goal sends Gopher Twitter into a tizzy as special teams actually help them win a game, which is a novel concept. But this is a absolute – I mean, this is one where I'm just like, if you want to pick Michigan State here, you go for it. I just think that Minnesota's physicality on both sides is going to eventually win out, and I think that Minnesota gets enough stops compared to what Mel Tucker's defense could kind of get by. And I just think that this is another team that I believe the week before they travel out to Washington, mm-hmm. which go Apple Cup, Luke's favorite team, Washington. I just think that we're going to know a lot more about that team. I don't think this is a top 15 team. It is truly remarkable, Luke, that they found a way to win 11 games last year with the worst pass defense in college football. And I just think there's some regression in the mean coming.
Yeah, I would agree. I think, you know, obviously your first road game is going to be a challenge. I mean, I know as well as anyone, Washington's not great. They have a new coach this year as well. So, you know, that game preceding, it doesn't necessarily give me like huge red flags. I really struggle to pick the Gophers here, mostly because largely because it's an away game. I'm with you on this is a barometer game and how it's going to set the trajectory of the season, but I don't think it dictates the total outcome. So I will take the Gophers with a loss here. off this one, so they'll be 3-1. So we finally diverge. You have them 4-0. I'll take the Gophers at 3-1 after an opening Big Ten loss on the road at Michigan State.
Again, I won't fight you, and that's where we'll have a game a little bit later where I'm sure we'll disagree on the outcome of it. But I think that game is like I feel like the national media looks at that game and says Michigan State wins that game if it's played 100 times, 75%. And I'm thinking to myself, I think it's a lot closer to 50-50 than what other people do. We'll see if that turns out to be foolish, but that's why they play the games.
Exactly. Okay, so let's move to October 1st, Saturday, an 11 a.m. kickoff. This is homecoming against Purdue at TCF Bank Stadium. Again,
Huntington Bank Stadium to you.
Jeez, boy, that is still so hard to break. How many years do you think it'll be that I keep doing that?
Well, the only thing I keep coming back to and why I remember it is because Jerry Kill said almost 6 years ago now, in January of 2017, I will never step foot back on TCF Bank Stadium turf. paraphrasing, obviously, and that was a horrible Jerry Kill, but technically Jerry Kill will be right. He won't be stepping back into TCF Bank Stadium because Huntington Bank is our Lord and Savior.
All right. So narratives here, Brom has really struggled against PJ Fleck. You can go back to the COVID year, back to the call that maybe gave the game for the Gophers. Still got to overcome it. Still got to win. The Gophers won again last year. In an absolute monsoon of a game. Ultimately, you know, Purdue is kind of a hot pick. They do lose a lot. They lose David Bell. They lose George Karlofkis to incredible players, arguably their best receiver. Well, you could argue that Rondell Moore is maybe their best receiver in recent memory, but arguably their best receiver in recent memory. George Karlofkis, arguably their best defender in recent memory as well. So they've got a lot to overcome, but Brom always seems to find a way to have a relevant passing game, and he has arguably the best quarterback in the Big Ten West this year, regardless of who's catching the ball, Ryan. So this will be another interesting game, and this has big implications for the Big Ten West, because as we talked about off the top, there seem to be four teams, and Purdue being one of them, that have a legitimate shot to win the Big Ten West this year.
You set that up beautifully, and I'm so glad you did. You mentioned, I guess we'll start there, is what do I think about Purdue's chances in the West? Well, here's what I'm saying. Luke's right. They have, I think, with a bullet, they have the best quarterback in the Big Ten West with Aiden O'Connell. You put him on any one of Iowa, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and I think they are the number one team with a bullet. But obviously, that's not how college football works. And I'd also argue they have the most manageable schedule. You look at their September schedule, they have their most demanding crossover game off the bat, where they get to host Penn State week one. No tape. I mean, if that was going to be a time I'd want Penn State, that would be it. And then their non-conference schedule is even more laughable, I'd argue, than Minnesota's. They play Indiana State, Florida Atlantic, and the Orangemen of Syracuse. That's laughable. It should be three wins. And then they obviously play Purdue or play Minnesota here on the road. But if I'm going to get behind Jeff Brom's team as a legitimate contender, I have two big questions. And I'm glad you went there, because David Bell is now gone. And I think you could argue, again, I wouldn't really argue with you one way or another, if you think Rondell Moore was better, if you think that David Bell was better. But who is the alpha receiver there? Because they've had two fantastic receivers, David Bell, Rondell Moore. Well, their wide receiver two from last year, Milton Wright, is now academically ineligible, and he's off the team.
And that's a bad loss for them, really.
57 catches. I thought he was a difference maker, and he's off the team. Jackson Anthrop, who felt like he was there as long as Robbie Hummel was, his 53 receptions finally graduated. So we're talking about replacing 200 catches in an alpha receiver. Now, I'm aware that they brought in the Iowa receivers of Charlie Jones, punt return extraordinaire, and Tyrone Tracy. They also brought in Auburn's Elijah Cannon. But my thing is here, we've seen how Jeff Brom has been able to kind of tailor his offense to his alpha generational type of receivers. I don't think he has one this year. I really don't. I think Tyrone Tracy and Charlie Jones and Elijah Cannon can be good players, but I think a Jeff Brom offense that, if it's going to propel that team to a Big Ten West title, needs an alpha. And I don't think they have it. And then to your point, defensively, or just even up front, we all know that Purdue runs the ball, and I'm saying this in air quotes, just enough to make it work with that prolific passing attack. Well, up front, they're breaking in a new left tackle, a new right guard, and Pro Football Focus wasn't exactly big fans of the rest of that returning offensive line, especially in pass protection. So can they keep Aiden O'Connell upright maybe a little longer than what they did last year, because that maybe these new receivers aren't going to create separation quite as much as David Bell did? But I think defensively, we're also talking about replacing all-world edge George Karlofkis, who was absolutely sensational. I've never seen Minnesota devote more pass protection towards one person than they did against George Karlofkis. I remember, and I'm laughing, Luke, because there were times in the game last year where they put three guys on Karlofkis. It would be like their tackle, a tight end, and a running back.
Yeah.
And then the next week, Iowa says, we're just going to go one-on-one, and George Karlofkis sets a season high in pressures with something like 13.
Yeah.
Very interesting game plan there for Kirk Ferentz and company. But my point being, who is the alpha for that defense? I think Jalen Graham and Reese Taylor are two really good players in the back end, but are we sure that they're going to be able to generate? They're going to be old up front, but I don't know that they have that star player. And that's a theme we'll come back to with this Minnesota team, is they lose two absolutely with bona fide, without a doubt, stud players. Karlofkis, David Bell. Now what? And I just have a hard time getting behind. I don't think they have any star players that are going to be able to propel them past 7-5, maybe 8-4, to actually get to that 9-win mark, which I think is what you're going to need to at least have a share of the Big Ten West this year. So that's where I look at this game for Minnesota, and Minnesota's had Jeff Brohm's number. I think it's four of their last five, and I think four straight have been Minnesota victories. You mentioned that win last year as animals were lining up on the sidelines two by two, getting ready to hop on the arc there with that monsoon of devastating proportions. But I just think that Minnesota's play in the trenches can, especially at home, maybe generate some pressure around Aiden O'Connell. It's an offensive line for Purdue that I'm already suspect about, and I have more trust in the Gopher defense being able to get a stop than I do Purdue's. And this is a game that historically, Luke, is a shootout, and I see it that way again. Minnesota 30, Purdue 24. I've got the Gophers 5-0 into the bye.
Okay. On this specific game, you bring up the fact that Fleck has had a lot of success against Brohm. I'm actually going to go with that continues as well. The one thing that I do want to make sure that we highlight, like, last year's defense for Purdue was much improved in what it's been in the past. I think that will somewhat continue. They do lose a George Karlofkis, but they do bring a lot back. Ultimately, I will take Minnesota here. The fact that it's at home, and again, for some reason, Fleck just seems to have Brohm's number. And so I'll bank on that history going into the bye. I have the Gophers 4-1. So they'll have a bye week, which sets them up for a game against Illinois. This will be October 15th, an 11 a.m. kick. This Illinois team last year was not great, but came into TCF Bank Stadium and got a win that ultimately cost the Gophers the chance to win the Big Ten West, a loss again that was pretty devastating for them. And ultimately, I think the reality is that Brett Bielema has never lost to Minnesota. And
isn't that quite the stat?
It is wild.
I had that come up in my research of Illinois. Is Brett Bielema in his career is now 8-0 against Minnesota.
He just goes by what the card says, Ryan. That's just
good times.
But ultimately, you know, this is an Illinois team that's rebuilding. You know, from what I have gathered in the limited research and Twitter research I've done, is they're not a particularly deep team, as you already noted. But they do have some talent. So if by some miracle they avoid injuries and they have incredible endurance, you know, this could be a formidable foe. But, you know, again, maybe this is the year Minnesota gets off the schneid and finally beats Brett Bielema.
I mean, I see it that way. But when you look at Illinois, and again, I don't pretend to be Jeremy Warner, who is our fantastic Illinois publisher for the Illini Inquirer, a.k.a. Illinois 247. He knows that team inside and out. But they lost a lot of key and experienced members from last year's 5-win team that beat Minnesota. Illinois hasn't released their starting quarterback yet. We'll be able to find out here in the coming days. But if it is Syracuse's Tommy DeVito or Artur Satowski, or well, it's not Artur Sikowski, he's finally gone, but it's just like, I don't see a necessarily big upgrade or downgrade, or I think it's just going to be about the same compared to what it was last year. But they do have two fantastic running backs. I mean, I think they have a top five in the Big Ten running back duo in Chase Brown, who I think is arguably the most underrated back in the Big Ten. And they have a bruiser and Josh McCray. So they have some running backs that are pretty good. And then my question marks begin, or continue, I guess, if you want to look outside of quarterback, is Isaiah Williams is going to be really good for them. But who else is going to catch a pass? Because Isaiah Williams is a slot receiver who is incredibly shifty, incredibly good. Who else is going to catch a pass? And then Bart Miller, former Minnesota offensive line coach, Bart Miller, he did pretty good with that unit. I mean, they beat the pulp out of Minnesota up front. Their offensive line did against Minnesota's D-line. Minnesota's D-line decided they didn't want to show up that day until it was too late. And by the time it was too late, that was too many points that they allowed. Well, outside of their right tackle who returns, Illinois has 24 career starts coming back. And they went to a lot of JUCO. And here's how I know that a team necessarily doesn't feel good about what they have. If you're going to a junior college level in the year of our Lord 2022, that really tells me that, number one, you don't feel good because most people just go to the portal like Minnesota has at times. But if you're going to JUCO routes, which is kind of unheard of more or less in this day and age, they took two JUCO offensive linemen. So how does that all come together? Now, I do think Ryan Walters, their defensive coordinator, is really good. We saw that last year. I think they returned some guys up front like Keith Randolph and Johnny Newton. They lose a couple of other key defensive linemen. And they also lost their best player on defense, who's now a member of the Detroit Lions, and Kirby Joseph. But here's the one aspect of this game that's the differentiator for me. Minnesota has a bye week to prepare. And I think we've seen historically, Luke Buehr, that offensive coordinator Kirk Ciarrocca, when he has extra time to prepare,
yeah, no kidding,
he's pretty damn good. I'm thinking of the games against Penn State, which Minnesota had a bye week to prepare for Penn State, and then they had extra time to prepare for Auburn. And now again, you can say, Ryan, remember Kirk Ciarrocca didn't call that game? No, Matt Simon did, but he did it with Kirk Ciarrocca's game plan, and I think that game plan was pretty damn good. And so Minnesota has a bye week to prepare, and Illinois' two games before they take on Minnesota, Luke, Madison and Iowa City. Now, they have to travel to Madison the first week of October. They get Iowa at home just before a revenge game for Brett Bielema. So two incredibly physical games for Illinois before Minnesota comes to town. I wonder where they're at compared to a rested Gopher team. Again, I'm not one to look past Illinois, but I just don't know that they have the offensive weapon power compared to what Minnesota's got off a bye week. Now, I know that Brett Bielema is an ungodly 8-0 against Minnesota, but I think they finally get off the schneid and they get out of Champaign. Minnesota 23, Illinois 17. Gophers get bowl eligibility by mid-October.
All right, I'm going to take the Gophers in this one as well. I do think that your point about Kirk Ciarrocca is one that I hadn't highlighted, but you're right. He is so good out of bye weeks. And frankly, if you're going to challenge for the Big Ten West, I think this is a game you absolutely have to have, already dropping one to Michigan State. So you've got a little bit of pressure on already with the upcoming game against Penn State in Happy Valley. So I'll take the Gophers here. So you are at 6-0. I am at 5-1 as we head to Happy Valley, October 22nd. This is a 6:30 game. I believe it is the whiteout. So if you're looking for an experience, this might be the one. If you haven't already booked your tickets, it could be a very fun experience to be at a night game in Happy Valley. Blessings to you as you navigate there. It is quite the travel, as I understand. I've never been myself, but I do understand that it is a little bit challenging to get to their stadium if you're going to fly in. But make sure you go and enjoy this game. On the season, the Gophers, as we have them now, 6-0 and 5-1 respectively. I just want to note that on for Penn State, the over-under for Penn State this year is 8 games. So this is a pretty good Penn State team, but probably not the one that's going to contend for the East, Ryan.
And well, as you mentioned it, I got an undefeated Minnesota team going into Happy Valley for a whiteout. You got a 5-1 Minnesota team. Buckle up, baby.
Wait. If they're 6-0, do you expect that the Gophers are ranked at this point? I still wouldn't think.
They're not ranked at 6-0 in some obscure SEC team at like 3-3 or 4-2 is, what's the point of voting at this point?
Yeah. I was going to say, if they're 6-0 and you have a win against Michigan State on the road and you have a win against Illinois on the road, That's,
I mean, again, it's not exactly murderer's row outside of Michigan State.
But I think
it's
reasonable.
I could argue they could be 23, 24, 25 if they're 5-1 like they're in your scenario. I think they'll be probably around 17 to 20 in my scenario. But since the last time Minnesota played Penn State in that 2019, it has been underachieving Central for the Nittany Lions. They are 11-11 in their last 22 games. They went 4-5 in the COVID year where Kirk Ciarrocco was the offensive coordinator and then promptly fired. And they just went 7-6 last season. So a 500 winning percentage is not exactly what folks in Happy Valley were exactly predicting and looking for and paying James Franklin all that money for. But like you said, Luke, like we've talked about on this podcast, I love to take a nice little stroll down Narrative Street. And Kirk Ciarrocco, we've asked him, Kirk, I don't believe you. It is a revenge game for Kirk Ciarrocco as he heads back to Pennsylvania for the first time since his firing. Now, I don't see this going the way of Minnesota, and why I say that is this is the most difficult road environment Minnesota has played in. I mean, you could say since 2021 Iowa, probably, but a whiteout game at Penn State is a different beast. And it is something that there's 100,000+ people all in white, and they're out right on your neck. Penn State is 4-1 in their last 5 whiteout games. And I think defensively, Penn State has the caliber of athlete that Minnesota doesn't have the horses to kind of go against offensively. And I say that with peace and love to Mo Ibrahim, Chris Ottman-Bell, Dalen Wright, and Luke Buehr's favorite Heisman candidate, Brevin Spanford. I just don't think that Minnesota ends up faring well in that type of environment. I've got Minnesota with their first loss and a Penn State 28, Minnesota 17 loss.
All right. I also have the Gophers on a loss here. I think on the road, the whiteout, like you mentioned, I think it's going to be a tough environment. And frankly, like, I don't know. It just doesn't feel like a good fit for Minnesota. They'll come off of the win against Illinois on mine, but they tend to have a game in the middle that's a 50-50 game. And this is, for me, a game that kind of sets the trajectory whether or not they're going to win the Big Ten West and how much buy-in this market's going to have. And as much as I would love for this team to win this game, I just don't see it happening. I just don't think they have enough star power.
If this game was played at 11 a.m., I may think differently.
Yeah.
Because the other note I would say here is this game for Penn State is an absolute definition, bona fide in black, thick Sharpie, a quote-unquote trap game. On one end is Michigan, and on the other end of this game is Ohio State. So I think the big reason why, and again, I cover this team, again, the point I'm trying to make here is I think the reason they made this the whiteout game and not an 11 a.m. kick is that Penn State has to get up for this game because they can't, they're trying to do everything they possibly can to make sure that this game goes the way that they need it to, because you can't have a slip up between Michigan and Ohio State. So if this was an 11 a.m. kick, I could see Penn State potentially kind of looking past them and Minnesota being obviously up for the game. But now that this game is a 6:30 kick under the lights and a whiteout, that is completely different circumstances and enough circumstances to really make me think that this isn't going to go the way of Minnesota.
All right. So I have the Gophers at 5-2. You have them at 6-1. Headed into a October 29th game, game time undecided at home against Rutgers. Rutgers is obviously, again, another program that they're going to be a lot of ties to. This is the Greg Schiano-led squad who PJ Fleck worked for. They have lots of ties between their staffs. You've got defensive coordinator now coming off of the Minnesota staff at Rutgers. There's a lot of connections here. They know each other well. They kind of have similar philosophies on culture, etc. But ultimately, Rutgers coming into this season, there are not a lot of high expectations for them. They're still trying to ramp things up in recruiting. If they're able to do that, you know, maybe they can turn this thing around, but I don't expect Rutgers will be favored in this game.
No. No. I think this is another bad Rutgers team. The story of the last decade and a half since they had some kind of relevancy. And this is a Rutgers team that you mentioned. Joe Harris-Simiak, former Gophers co-defensive coordinator as most recently as last year, is now the actual defensive coordinator for Rutgers, because all we need is more narratives and storylines for fans to follow. This is also where Curtis Dunlap ended up, which, peace and love to Curtis Dunlap, I think is a good thing for Minnesota's defensive line. So this is a offense where I just look at and I'm just like, woof. I mean, it's Noah Vedral, former Nebraska quarterback, is now out there. He's fine. I don't think he's anything to write home about. He can use his legs. They lose their best running back and Isaiah Pacheco to the NFL, who's now with the Kansas City Chiefs. And it's a patchwork group up front. Where is Rutgers going to be by late October defensively? Because that's where obviously Greg Schiano and a Joe Harris-Simiak-led defense, Joe's going to know a lot about Minnesota's offense, I could argue, once again, because he knows the personnel quite well from going against it for so many years. But how does Rutgers score more than 17 points?
Yeah, I think that's a question.
You know, I don't have enough faith in that offense where I think Minnesota can put up 21, 24, 27, and it's not going to be pretty, but it's a Big Ten win. So I have Minnesota 27, Rutgers 13, 7-1 heading into November.
I have the Gophers winning this game. So I have them at 6-2. You have them at 7-1. Going into the November 5th tilt in Lincoln, Nebraska against Nebraska. In Lincoln, Nebraska against Nebraska, obviously. No game time still for this one. You know, storylines here, you know, this is the best 3-9 team of all time. The stats prove it. But at the end of the day, you can't have as many turnovers and special team blunders as Nebraska had last year. Scott Frost, I think, basically cleaned house. He's kind of got one last redeeming hope here. They've definitely got talent, Ryan. They found a way to recruit, but their ability to deploy talent and to develop talent maybe hasn't been to the standard that translates to winning. Ultimately, this is actually a really hard game for me. I know how Minnesota struggled the last time they won in 2020.
That was the game in 2020 where they had no business winning.
Yeah.
The 2020 game is the one they had no business winning. Right. We're down like 20 guys. Ariante Ursary's making his first start, and they somehow come out of Lincoln with a victory. And that's where, Luke, I got this game as a loss.
I have this game as a loss.
Wow. Well, I'll tell you, the lovely people of Gopher Illustrated are not happy with me.
No.
That I predicted this game as a loss. And I get it, because you can argue, and you just did, that it's never a talent issue for me at Nebraska.
No.
It's Scott Frost is a bad football coach. And if I had to rank the 14 Big Ten football coaches in terms of development, Scott Frost is at the very bottom, and that's with capital letters. So I look at this Nebraska team. No team in the Big Ten took more scholarship players from the portal than Nebraska did. They have a brand new quarterback in Casey Thompson. They paid a lot of money in NIL for a TCU edge. And they've also got a Minnesota native from Minneapolis North and Northern Iowa All-American corner Omar Brown. Now, do I have questions about this Nebraska team? You're damn right. Because their offensive line was absolutely brutal last year. Bryce Benhart was horrible. Turner Corcoran was even worse. Their tackles were horrible. And their best offensive lineman in Cam Jurgens is off to the NFL, and they've got a brand new offensive line coach who is making them allegedly puke 10 to 15 to 20 times per practice, which is one of the dumbest things Scott Frost has ever said. And Scott Frost has said some pretty dumb things. Did you ever see that last week when that all blew up?
Yeah, I did see that. I mean, those are the sorts of things that, like, one, are you really keeping metrics of that? And then two, why would you ever say that if you are?
Look, but, one of their players said it, and so I think somebody asked Scott. And then Scott just like doubled down, put all the gasoline on the fire, and was like, yeah, they're puking, you know, 10 plus times a practice. I have been to countless practices in 12 years of doing this job for Gopher football. I think the only person I've ever seen puke at a practice was Grant Norton. And that's like once in 12 years. And it's just such a stupid thing. Now, you know, they've lost some guys defensively. They've trying to plug a lot of holes back there. But here's what I come down to is why I pick this game as a loss for Minnesota is because college football is a weird sport. It's the same reason why Minnesota can lose to Bowling Green in Illinois and then find a way to beat Wisconsin. I think it's going to be packed. I think Nebraska is going to be the highest variance team in the Big Ten, arguably college football. Like, there is another scenario where I could see Nebraska winning three or four games this year. And if that's the case, Scott Frost is no longer going to be employed there. I could also see a scenario where they win six or seven, and then it's what in the world does Nebraska do? I could also see a scenario where they win eight games. But it's just the consistency from a Scott Frost-led team is never there. It hasn't been in his Nebraska tenure ever. That's why you see them beat the pulp out of Northwestern last year and then lose some games like they did down the stretch. So I think this is a week where Nebraska swings back the other way and they're a good football team at home. Place is going to be rocking. I think it's a place where maybe Minnesota slips up a little bit. But the inconsistency is going to be maddening if you're a Nebraska fan. And I don't envy you, especially if they end up in purgatory, which for them, and I look at their Vegas line, is 7.5 wins, same one as Minnesota. Like, if they end up at 7 wins, what does Nebraska do? I have no idea what their athletic director decides to do then. But I just don't think that there's enough consistency from this Nebraska team to win the West. I think there's going to be enough consistency for them at home here in Lincoln. Minnesota falls 24-23, 7-2, Minnesota.
Okay, As I said, I already picked Nebraska. Some justification here for me. Nebraska largely struggled, not because they were horrible on defense, not because they were horrible on offense, except, you know, their quarterback turned the ball over way too much. But the fact that Adrian Martinez isn't there. You know, they were somewhat one-dimensional with him running the ball. He's often, you know, 90% of their offense. I think they might be able to be a little bit more multiple and be a little bit harder to defend. Well, additionally, I don't expect as many turnovers.
The interesting part is Mark Whipple, their new offensive coordinator. They got a brand new offensive coordinator from Pitt. Obviously did a lot of good things for Pitt last year, but he wants to pass more.
Yeah.
And it's like, does he know Bryce Benhart is an offensive lineman who struggled?
Well, yeah.
Like, their left guard was ruled not academically. He failed the drug test and he's out for the year. Their other tackle is not good. Like, I know that I'm painting this as, well, Ryan, why are you picking Nebraska? I'm telling you, like, this is another one of those games that is absolutely a 50-50. If you want to switch this to a win and Michigan State to a loss, I get it. But, like, this is another place that is going to be a difficult road environment because Nebraska fans show up. The only way they don't show up here is if Nebraska is, I don't know, 3-4 coming into this game.
No, they'll show up regardless, man. I mean,
I remember the game, what was it, I forget the game. It's like 2016. Nebraska was 0-6. I forget it was 16 or 17. I'm sure somebody on Twitter will correct me. But they were 0-6, and I remember whoever was on that Gopher football staff at the time, I've had multiple members tell me when they came out of that tunnel, that Minnesota team was shocked because they were an 0-6 football team and the stands were packed. If Minnesota was an 0-6 football team, there would have been 20,000 people there.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to show up, and I just think football is a weird sport, especially with 18 to 22-year-olds, and I see this as a loss.
Yeah, I'm with you that it's going to be a tough one. I think it'll be very close, but I'm with you. It could go either way, 50-50. Okay, Ryan, so the November 12th opponent is Northwestern at Huntington Bank Stadium. This is a team that is led by maybe arguably one of the one of the best performing coaches, given the circumstances that he faces at Northwestern, in alumni Pat Fitzgerald. You know, they have found ways to go from the bottom of the conference back to the top when we're talking about the Big Ten West and in the title game. But I don't think that this year is the year that people are expecting that to be the case. Typically, they do that when they have some a relevant solution at quarterback. And I don't think anybody is necessarily convinced that's the case this upcoming season.
My question with Northwestern is, how do they score more than 16.6 points per game, which is what they managed last year? Because I look at the offense, they return probably Ryan Helinski as their starter, and I'll remind you, he was not good. Okay? He completed 54% of his passes with more interceptions than touchdowns. Does that inspire confidence in you, Luke?
Not particularly. And let's be honest too, Ryan, their defense usually is pretty awesome and it struggled. And part of that's their offense's inability to stay on the field, but still.
It's interesting. Like, they have a couple of good running backs, Maple Grove, Zevin Hall, and they get back Cam Porter, who was really good. But passing game. So their quarterback ain't good. Their leading receiver and Stephen Robinson's no longer around. Jordan Mosley's now at Mississippi State with Mike Leach. And that leaves you with slot receiver Malik Washington and Evan Hull as your two leading target returners. Is that enough firepower? My answer is going to be no. Now, no. They also lost their best their best player on defense to Notre Dame. An All-American safety. They took quite a few transfers on the D-line, and I think we've all learned to never doubt a Northwestern defense. But I just keep coming back to, is this a team that can score 20 points? Like, yeah. I don't know that they can, and especially by the time this game comes up on the schedule. Like, we're talking about the 2 weeks before Northwestern comes to the Twin Cities. They have a road game against Iowa 2 weeks before, and then that week before, they get Ohio State at home. So how many plays has that defense been on the field? Because they're going to go against, like, Iowa's defense is one of the best in the country, I think, this year, and Ohio mm-hmm. State is going to have some of the best athletes in the country. Again, I just think that this is a game where the Wildcats defense is going to be gassed, and I have no faith in them putting up enough points here. Minnesota 28, Northwestern 10. Where are you at?
I also don't see the Gophers losing this game. While it is in, while it is at home, is also a big benefit for me. I know the Gophers have sometimes struggled in East Lansing, but the fact this one's at home, I think
East Lansing or Ryan?
Sorry, Ryan Field. Boy, goodness gracious, the brain sometimes. I think that this is a good opportunity for the Gophers to bounce back after what I have predicted is to be a tough loss against Northwestern. So let's see, that's 10 total games. So I have the Gophers at 7-3. You have them, I believe, at 8-2.
Yep.
So we're coming down here to the stretch in November, and you make your money in November. You kind of finish up your season. Arguably the two best teams in the conference over the last decade, maybe even the last 20 years, coming up in Iowa and Wisconsin. So on November 19th, the Gophers will play at Huntington Bank Stadium against the Iowa Hawkeyes, a team that PJ Fleck has never found a way to beat just yet. I imagine you could say that they have this one circled, or this is a game they're looking towards. At the end of the day, they just got to win it, Ryan.
Yes, they do. And I look at this Iowa team this year, and I actually, Iowa fans, if you're listening to this, I like the over on your 7.5 that Vegas has got you on. So I just think, what is the ceiling for Iowa this year? And I say that because that schedule's something, man. I mean, you got crossover games against the two best teams in the division in Ohio State and Michigan.
Yes.
You have to travel to Minneapolis. Now, again, I'm aware Kirk Ferentz done pretty well against PJ Fleck, undefeated. But I have a lot more questions than answers about Iowa especially offensively. Now, defensively, I think they're going to be really good.
Here's the question for me defensively. I'm with you that they're going to be good. They found a way to force a ton of turnovers. Can they do it a third time in a row, right? Like, I guess I haven't looked back, but the last two seasons, it's just been like kind of unprecedented for my from my vantage point.
So here's the over-under I set with David Iacolt, who is the Iowa publisher for 24/7. Is last season, Iowa had 9 more interceptions than any other Big Ten team. They had 25. Okay? So I set the line when we were at Big Ten Media Days with him at 18.5. He took the over, and I was like, I'm glad to take the under. Now, I understand that Iowa is a team that is one of the best in the country at forcing turnovers. Mm-hmm. But my question is this. What if Iowa, and I say this in air quotes, only gets 16 interceptions instead of 25? Like, 16 is a fantastic number. It would have tied for the lead in the Big Ten last year. That's really good.
Mm-hmm.
What happens if Iowa's offense has 10 less short fields?
Yeah.
Like Spencer Petras and Tanner Morgan. Tanner Morgan is exponentially better. And what I mean by that is, thanks to our friend of the podcast, Stats of War, we have the most recent data from last season on expected points added. I think that, in my mind, is one of the best, if not the best, indicators of quarterback play. So how did Tanner Morgan compare to Iowa quarterback Spencer Petras? Morgan added 31 points to his team, which was 58th out of 130 FBS quarterbacks. Spencer Petras, minus 32.6 points taken away. So we're talking about a 62-point swing in EPA or a 64-spot difference between 58th in the country and 122nd. Like, if you don't think that's significant, I don't know what else you need. I've also got questions about skill position for them. They lost Tyrone Tracy and Charlie Jones to Purdue. They lost Goodson to the Packers. Looks like he might have a shot to make the 53. Like, I understand that, and again, from talking with our friend of the podcast, Jeffrey the Greek, that they feel better about their running backs just being able to keep them on schedule. Where Goodson liked to go east-west too much, puts them behind the sticks, whereas maybe these running backs will be 2nd and 7 more often.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but who's going to catch a pass? Not named Sam Laporta, because yes, they've got some guys, but they're banged up going into the season here there. And when you have a quarterback that has struggled mightily, and I don't even know that Spencer Petras will be the guy by the time this game comes, but I just have a lot more question marks about this team. Now, again, you can say it's an Iowa offensive line. What worries do you have? But there's no more Tyler Linderbaum there to kind of make that, you know, stir that drink. And I think you could draw potentially a comparison between Iowa's 21 offensive line and Minnesota's 22 offensive line. They've got all world centers and they've got a bunch of question marks around them. Now we'll see how it ends up by that time of the season. But I have questions about Iowa, and especially with the schedule that they have. Like, this game is going to be interesting. Minnesota gets them at home. It's on senior day in the two previous weeks. Now, again, I think some people are going to tell me I put too much weight into the schedule. And I would argue people don't put enough weight into it. And what I mean by that is, let's look at the immediate schedule beforehand, because that's going to be the most recent data points that you and I will be talking about. The 2 weeks before Iowa comes into the Twin Cities, they get to play Kirk Ferentz is kryptonite and Jeff Brohm's Purdue team in West right. Lafayette. And then the week before, Iowa takes on Wisconsin at home. So I would argue, I don't know what their record's going to be after those two games. I could see 2-0, 1-0, 1-1, 0-2. But it's too tough. It's the, you know, outside of the Ohio State and Michigan games, they have their two toughest games of the season outside of those two crossover games before they come in. It's senior day. It's at home, and I trust Tanner Morgan more than I do Spencer Petras. And it's just, I think this is the year they finally get over the hump. Now, I have a ton of respect for Phil Parker and his defense. I really do. But I think this is going to be a good old-fashioned, let's take the under. Minnesota 20, Iowa 17. And for the first time in too long, Minnesota gets the pig back in Minneapolis.
All right. I want to state a couple things before I get to my might be kind of long-winded story, Ryan. First, Kirk Ferentz, he always finds a way to keep Iowa relevant, and it's really impressive. And they've obviously, you know, won Big Ten West championships and Big Ten championships and all that. Kudos to them. They also find a way to give themselves opportunities to win. And they do that largely by playing good defense and special teams and just good enough offense. They're never world beaters. And I know that that's what their fans would like to see. At the end of the day, they made the adjustments against Minnesota and said, if we're going to beat Minnesota last year, they had to throw the ball. And they did that. And they got enough chunk plays and they sat Petras, and that was the difference. And they found a way to win that game. This year, though, I'm going to pick Minnesota, and it has nothing to do with objective logic.
See, like, here's my thing with Iowa is that schedule is brutal because of the crossover games. You get Michigan at home, which is nice, but you have to travel to Ohio State. You're on the road at Purdue, on the road at Minnesota. You know, maybe, again, I don't know that this is the year Matt Campbell finally gets off the schneid, but it's like, Iowa could have a really good year and be 8-4 with mm-hmm. losses to like Michigan, Ohio State, Minnesota, Wisconsin. Those would all be probably ranked losses. But it's just, I don't have enough faith in nepotism offense. And I just want to know who are going to be the guys that can be the chunk play getters for that offense. Like Keegan Johnson could be that. Maybe it's Arlen Bruce, but Keegan Johnson hasn't practiced. You know, the guy that they were hyping up here in the offseason, I think his name was Deontay Vines. He's now out for at least half the season, I think, because he broke his wrist or something. Like, there are a lot of questions I have about that offense. And it's just, I have less questions about Minnesota's and the fact that it's at home, two tough games before Iowa comes into town. I think the stadium it should absolutely be a sellout. It's just, I think this is finally the year they get off the schneid, but this is going, I mean, we could get into the semantics of it. If you're going to win the West this year,
you got
to
win this game.
You have to win this game, and you probably have to win the final game of the season too. And that's where it's not like, I just don't look at these teams and say either one of them's daunting, because I would say Iowa's defense is better than they were last year. And I think this could be like a top four Kirk Ferentz defense.
It's the best defense in the Big Ten.
But I could also argue this is going to be one of their worst offenses, because what,
yeah,
like, what do you feel good about there besides Sam Laporta? I just don't know. And so that's where it's like, it's another one of those questions where I watched the game last year like you did. I watched Minnesota in Iowa City. I was in the damn press box. 40 minutes time of possession, 140 more total yards. Iowa only wins that game because of the chunk plays.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they still found a way to do it. And I understand that it's kind of been that way where it's just Minnesota gets in their own head and yada, yada, yada. And that's where it's just like, if you take all that out of the equation, I just have less questions in this game being at home and not in Kinnick Stadium.
Do you remember?
I got them at 9-2 going into Wisconsin.
All right. Do you remember in April, I texted you, I had already decided who is going to win regardless of the outcome, this Iowa-Minnesota game. Do you remember that?
No. What did you say?
I happened to be, it was like a Saturday morning. I take a virtual spin class from time to time in my house.
Oh, look at you. Good for you.
And, you know, some of those you can do live. Some of them you can do on demand. I happened to do this one live. There happened to be someone there, also in his 30s, from Iowa, with a logo, Iowa Hawkeye logo. And I was like, you know what? Let's race, buddy. So I don't have a Minnesota logo, so maybe this wasn't a fair fight, right? But on that day, my total power output exceeded his. And I decided that was the good omen that Gopher football needed, to say that in the end, Minnesota will find a way. And I should mention that I barely beat him at the very, very end. because I didn't notice him on the leaderboard for like the entire time. But I did beat him, and that's all that matters. So Minnesota,
in the words
wins this
of
game.
Delta Sky Club's greatest customer, Justin Gard, not all heroes wear capes, Luke, and I thank you for your service.
All right, so I got the Gophers at, I think I have them at 8-3. You have them at 9-2, Ryan.
So either way, going into the final game, if you believe Vegas, we are both already on the over with one game to play.
Correct, and I do believe that with either of those records, I do think that the Big Ten West still has a chance to be won for the Gophers. Going into Madison, Wisconsin, where the Gophers will be playing on November 26th on a Saturday to cap off the 2022 season. So, Ryan, this is a team that we have talked about at length. The Gophers found a way to win at home. Graham Mertz was not particularly great on that day, and the defense for Wisconsin is always good. So what do we expect to see this year in 2022?
Oh, Graham Mertz. It's just like, if you gave Wisconsin Aiden O'Connell, I think then I would agree that Wisconsin should be the 85% favorite.
I agree with you there, but here's the other thing. Braylon Allen, how many games did he play last year, Ryan?
Did you know that he is only 17 or 18 years old?
I did.
I had no idea until every ESPN announcer told me multiple times.
I can't remember off the top of my head, but I do recall that he struggled in the Minnesota game, maybe from injury from that game, but I'm curious.
He was
curious,
banged up.
Yeah.
And then he got even more banged up because they hit him low.
Yeah. And I'm curious if he can survive an entire season. Because I believe Chez Malusi started off and got the majority, if not all, of the carries early in the season. Then Braylon Allen came on towards more the middle.
Well, the way I understand it is it was like Malusi probably like 65-35 with Braylon Allen. And then Malusi gets hurt, and then they have to put all their chips in the Braylon Allen basket because they had a couple of running backs.
Helped, right?
Yeah, I mean,
that was the right call.
So.
Yeah.
So it is just like, you look at Wisconsin this year, and I think this thing, like, how do I want to phrase this? If Wisconsin's going to have a ceiling this season, it's going to have to be squarely because of Graham Mertz. Now, I talked about expected points added, a.k.a. EPA, earlier between Tanner Morgan and Spencer Petras. Well, let's do the same thing with Tanner Morgan and Graham Mertz. Tanner Morgan, let's do rough numbers, plus 31 points added to his team, 58th out of 130 FBS quarterbacks. Graham Mertz, minus 30 points taken away from his team, 121st out of 130 quarterbacks. I'll tell you again, if you don't think a 60-point swing in EPA or a 63-spot difference is significant, I'm not sure what to tell you, and I'm not sure what you're looking for. But the interesting point here, Luke, is since he set the world on fire and people proclaimed him the Heisman favorite after that start against Illinois in 2020, his first start sets the world on fire. The subsequent next 19 games, most recent 19 games of his career, he is completing 58% of his passes with two more interceptions than touchdowns. And oh, by the way, his top three pass catchers are now gone from last season, and Jake Ferguson, Danny Davis, Kendrick Pryor. He's got a brand new offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach. And I will clarify, because I had a couple of Wisconsin Badger fans tell me I was an idiot and I have no idea what I'm talking about. It's also a Wisconsin offensive line that will have four guys likely starting at new spots up front. Now, I understand that some of these guys have started to tackle. Maybe they're moving to guard or guard moving to tackle, but you're still starting in a new spot. So you've got new guys starting up front in terms of at new positions. You've got Graham Mertz, and you have brand new guys to throw the ball to. Now, I understand that Braylon Allen and Chez Malusi, if you wanted to say they're the best running back duo on the Big Ten West, I think you absolutely have an argument, and I probably wouldn't. I mean, it's not really worth getting into. Now, Justin Gard knows that he loves himself some Jim Leonard on defense, and I still think they're going to be really good back there. They've brought in some transfers, but it's just, I just don't have any trust in Graham Mertz. And here's the thing for Wisconsin fans that's like scary. Like I read Evan Flood in those practice reports to try and get a sense of what is going on there. It is Graham Mertz or bust there. Like behind him, it is scary. Like they hitched their wagon last year when they said Jack Cohn, you hit the road, and he goes to Notre Dame. Obviously outperforms Graham Mertz. But who is catching a pass there? Now you can argue it's not gonna matter because Wisconsin's Wisconsin, Ryan. But I have so many questions about brand new pass catchers, Graham Mertz, and I know Braylon Allen and Ches Malusi are good, but where are they going to be in late November? Like they're going to have to ride those two the first 11 games of the season. And now, again, I know there are going to be some people who say Ryan's schedule doesn't matter. Well, the two previous games for Wisconsin before they play Minnesota and Camp Randall to end their season, two road games against Iowa and Nebraska. Now, we've already discussed Nebraska's range of outcomes. I think Iowa's going to be a pretty good team. It's going to be two tough games. So, again, that's where I don't know what the ceiling is. You understand what I'm trying to say? Because what is the ceiling if they just can't figure out how to pass the ball? They can get to 8 wins, I think, easily because their defense is going to be that good. And I think Braylon Allen, Ches Malusi, and they'll figure it out up front. But I just have no – like, I could see – now, again, they also have Ohio State at Ohio State on the schedule, but I don't know what a ceiling is on that type of team when – now, if Graham Mertz decides to revert back into form where he was the – I think it was the Army All-American quarterback MVP, or just the MVP of the Army All-American game, sure. But what have we seen in the last 95% of his starts? Or in 95% of his starts, he's been bad. So why do we think now that with a brand new coordinator and brand new pass catchers that he's suddenly going to have the light bulb go on?
I don't know that you can. I think where he drastically needs to improve is within the red zone, right? That's where... again, going off memory, where he's really struggled. And frankly, that's where it's toughest to throw when you're inside the red zone, the windows get smaller, etc. Ultimately their season probably rides largely on his shoulders. But you know, they can manage game script and stay in the game and, you know, have a chance and hope that they just make just enough plays.
Well, that's where, like, you look at their road schedule this year. I mentioned it. So their road schedule this year, on the road in Columbus, on the road at Northwestern. Again, I don't think Northwestern's going to be a good team, but they're also on the road in East Lansing. So as of right now, Michigan State's ranked the top 15 team. And then road games as well against Iowa and Nebraska. I mean, that's up there with like Minnesota's road schedule for this year, if not maybe even a little bit more difficult. So I just... I just don't know about Wisconsin this year. Like, can they get to 9 wins? Yes, but they're going to have it figured out at least somewhat of a game with their passing offense.
Yeah. I think there's a plausible story where Wisconsin ends up 4th and Wisconsin ends up 1st. I think that's totally reasonable.
Yes. Again, I'm not saying that Paul Chryst is going to get fired after this season. I'm not saying that Wisconsin's going to miss a bowl game. I just think, we talked about it earlier with Nebraska. Nebraska could be anywhere from 3-9 to 8-4, and it wouldn't surprise me. The range of outcomes there, if you want to look at it on a graph, is very, very large. I just think the range of outcomes for Wisconsin is very small. I think it's somewhere between 7-5, 8-4, and I would be surprised if they're any worse or any better than that. And that's where I look at this game for Minnesota. Joe Rossi's held the Wisconsin offense to 20 or points or less in 3 of his 4 meetings. I look at this game and say, who do you trust more? Now, we saw it in 2018, Minnesota goes into Camp Randall. Alex Hornibrook is Alex Hornibrook, and Minnesota runs away with that game. And in 2020, that was a debacle where Minnesota had every opportunity to win, and they couldn't finish in that COVID season. And then last year, they obviously take care of business. So it's like 3 of the last 4. You've won 2 of the last 4 overall. They've done it before. And Tanner Morgan has done it before in Camp Randall. I just this is all very Dan Barrera long-winded-esque to say. I trust Minnesota's offense more than I do Wisconsin's. And when I think that, again, I don't know that I would go as far as saying Minnesota and Wisconsin's defenses are in the same tier. I think Wisconsin is one of the top seven defenses in college football. But I also think Minnesota is in a tier right below that and a top 15, top 20 defense. And when I say that, I think Minnesota's got a better offense. I think Wisconsin's got a worse offense. So which team do you think can get to 21st? I'm going to say it's Minnesota. I'm going to say Minnesota 23, Wisconsin 17. And a win in Camp Randall sends them to Indianapolis.
All right. So you got them at 10 and 2. I was going to pick Minnesota to win this game as well, which would put them at 9-3 for me. Ultimately, you know, I think this is going to be very close. I think that Minnesota, you know, last time they won at Camp Randall, took a big special teams play.
Meaningful special teams return play.
Yeah. But ultimately, I'm with you on that. Like, I think Wisconsin's defense is better. I think Minnesota's is close. I think that Minnesota's offense is probably just a tad better. But, you know, we have questions there in their ability to throw the ball, too. But I think we have a little bit more confidence with Kirk Schrocka coming back. I think they just have a few more weapons. The reality is it's going to have to come down to like Dalen Wright, Brevin Spanford. They need to be more consistent to join Chris Ottman-Bell. And, you know, then I think you really definitely have the upper hand in offense, even though I'm with you that Ches Malusi and Braylon Allen are, you know, one of the most dynamic duos at running back. But Mo Ibrahim and Trey Potts are nothing to scoff at either. I think this will be a good game. Again, this is another one which I think is going to make for a great season, Ryan, where there's a number that I think I can see either going either way. We don't have the fortune of being able to know like who's going to be healthy and, you know, how things are going to develop. But, you know, on paper, I think there's a number of games that can be 50-50. I gave Minnesota the win against Wisconsin and Iowa, which I'd call 50-50. I gave them the loss against Nebraska and Penn State, ultimately, and also Michigan State, and I gave them the win against Purdue. I think all those games are like could be 50-50 games. I think Minnesota plays a really good Big Ten schedule where they have a chance to be good. I have them at what, 6-3? You have them at 7-2. I mean, that's phenomenal. And let's not overstate this would both of us have PJ Fleck being over 500 in Big Ten play following this season if it follows form, which would be the first time since the 70s, Ryan.
Yeah. Again, I look at the outcomes for this season now as we kind of get to the home stretch of this podcast, and I say, let's look at it as if it was on a bell curve. And that's where, if I were to pick the median point of that, I think I would kind of be around probably 9-3, maybe 8.5 in terms of where the median outcome is there. And I understand that, you know, I'm kind of revealing that I'm just a little bit bullish. Obviously, I just picked them to win 10 games. But I also just think it's if we're going to go on the, you know, the downhill slope of that bell curve and Minnesota only wins, say, 7 games, well, what happened? Well, what I'm projecting for is some stars to kind of emerge. And that's my biggest question about this Gopher football team, Luke, is I think back to 2019. And why that season was so fruitful is because you had stars emerge. You had Rashad Bateman, Tyler Johnson, Antoine Winfield, Kamal Martin, among others. I mean, Tanner Morgan obviously played well there too. Mm-hmm. So did the running backs.
Cashman.
But you had Bateman and Antoine Winfield really play well. And that's why they became top 2-round draft picks. Now, I look at this 22 team. And the reason I'm so bullish on them is I just think they have so much depth. Whereas if an injury does hit, it's not going to derail the season more or less. Now, obviously, if Tanner Morgan goes down or, you know, I think that would be the biggest one. Or
John Michael Schmitz.
Yes, John Michael Schmitz there too. It's that obviously changes, you know, your projection on things. But it's more so they have guys who could be those stars. I mean, we've seen Tanner Morgan do it before. We've seen Mo Ibrahim do it before. But if this season's going to be what I'm ended up projecting it to be, it's going to be Dalen Wright takes a step forward. He doesn't have to be the star. He just has to be a good number two for Chris Ottman Bell. Brevin Spanford has to take a step forward. He doesn't have to be Max Williams, but he needs to catch 35-ish balls and be a difference maker in the passing game. And then defensively, that's where, you know, we've talked about it for years now, is they've got a lot of guys who can play. But who is going to be the difference maker? Is Tyler Newbin going to go from that 2020 season where he was out of his depth and as he was swimming as a freshman there? Last season, he was an above average safety. Is he going to take the next step to being an all Big Ten safety? Is Jordan Howden in his fourth year of starter going to be an all Big Ten safety? Justin Wally goes and has some inconsistent moments at times, as we saw in the Iowa game, and then he rebounds the next week against Wisconsin with that huge pick. Is Terrell Smith going to have the light on from fall camp all the way through that season? Is Mariano Sorimeri going to continue his progression? Who is going to be the guys up front to complement Thomas Rush? I think they have guys that can be, but that's the thing, and that's the whole hypothetical, and the whole hypothetical here is it has to stop being hypothetical, if that makes sense. They have to have a few guys take that step forward and be stars.
Yeah.
Offensively, if they can get Tanner Morgan playing a little better, you're still going to have Mo Ibrahim there. And if you can have Dalen Wright complement Chris Ottman Bell along with Brevin Spanford, those are three very viable pass catching options.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Defensively, you need to have some playmakers, because that's one of the biggest things Joe Rossi has stressed here in the offseason. He knows that they were a very good defense last year, but he wants more takeaways.
Mm-hmm.
And you can even argue that there were guys in plenty of positions last year. Again, I think back to the Iowa game. Justin Wally has one slip right through his hands at the Iowa 20, would have changed the game. Mariano Sorimarin has one go right through his hands, would have changed the game. If just a couple of these guys can finish these plays, they're in the right position. But if they can get some more turnovers and generate some more turnovers, that's where you start to get into the right side of the bell curve, where my prediction ends up at 10-2.
I agree with you in that they probably have the depth. I think part of the reason people aren't nearly as bullish on Minnesota is that lack of star and that name recognition, right?
So, which I think is incredibly...
I think that's fair.
I think it's an incredibly valid argument, and yeah. I get it. And that's where, again, if none of these guys emerge, you're looking at a 7-5 season. If a couple of these guys emerge, you're going to be around that 9-win mark.
Mm-hmm.
If, you know, 4 or 5 guys emerge, that's where you get to be in this, you know, in the end that I projected. So that's where, again, maybe I'm being a little bullish here. I think a lot of you would tell me, you know, you can stop sipping on the maroon and gold color Kool-Aid. But that's where it culminates with, if that's my biggest question about this team is where is the star? I look at Iowa, I have more questions about them, just generally as an offense. Same thing goes for Wisconsin. Same thing goes for Purdue, where it's like, I can tell you, like, if you compare and contrast Minnesota and Purdue right now, they're running into the same issue with they don't have an alpha receiver ready. Like, David Bell and Rondale Moore ain't coming back through that door, and neither is George Karlofkis. Now, Minnesota has the same star thing, but I can see some guys potentially coming into that. So it is a very winnable West. Now, they obviously have to do it because they've been close in 2019 and they didn't do it.
They're close in 2021, yeah.
And they didn't do it.
Yeah.
So eventually you just have to go do it.
Yeah.
And if they don't do it and they're 9-3 and they, you know, have a share of the West, but they go 1-1 in those final games and Iowa or Wisconsin head to the West title again, it's just another missed opportunity. So again, I just think that is going to be the biggest thing we're going to have to watch for is who emerges in those first 6 games. I mean, we're going to find out a lot once that Michigan State team comes into town, because then it's going to be, you have to empty out the playbook.
Oh, we go to Michigan State. But yeah, I'll just say again, I think that this is a very interesting season. I think the West is pretty equal at the top, and which can make it really fun and make those games very meaningful all year long. They always are because of the way that football is structured. But the fact that there's so much parity, I think, in the West will make it really fun and potentially really wild.
And that's where, that's the beauty of parity. Where, like, if you were to give, you know, if you were to flip-flop Minnesota and Iowa's crossover schedule, I'm not having the same conversation with you. But the reality is Iowa's got Michigan and Ohio State on the schedule. That matters. Like, I understand that Minnesota's got no cakewalk either with at East Lansing and at Happy Valley in a whiteout. But it's also, it's just, it all plays a part. And if you kind of put it all together, that's where I let off the show with saying, I think there's three teams that have a viable option. It's Minnesota, it's Iowa, it's Wisconsin. And I think you could flip a coin between the three teams when you look at the schedule, when you look at their offenses, and you look at how it ends up just kind of coming together. And that's where right now, as we sit here in time, 9 days from the opener, I got the Gophers winning the West with a slight advantage. Now, I'm not going to fight you either way on Iowa and Wisconsin, but the overarching point is, Luke, this should be a fun season.
Yes. Yes, I completely agree. All right. We appreciate that you stuck with us for over an hour and a half. I know that this tends to be a lengthy episode. We get into it. I guess hold us to account. I know that you will hold Ryan to account and you don't hold me to account. I appreciate that. But that said, we're excited for a fun season ahead. Thank you for listening to Gopher Gridiron Radio, and go Gophers.